If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Saturday, December 24th, 2022. I'm Jessica Rosenthal. If it seems like every year's a political year now, even the off years, that's because they are. As buzz turns to formal announcements and then fundraising for the next presidential race. And 2023 will likely be no exception.
The biggest story of 2023 is who is going to lead the Republican Party in the House.
I'm Ryan Schmelz. We all know Santa Claus has been known for bringing presents to children across the world. But did you also know some credit Santa for helping to preserve the Union? Hear the story of how St. Nicholas helped deliver the present of victory during the Civil War.
The public, they thirsted for something fun. They thirsted for something magical. They thirsted for something hopeful. They wanted to give their kids an escape.
This is the Fox News Rundown from Washington. At some point in 2023, former President Donald Trump will not be the only name in 2024 presidential politics. The question is, when will others join him? President Biden himself was asked after midterms in November when he would make it official. He said his intention remained to run again and that a lack of a red wave had Democrats breathing a sigh of relief.
My intention is that I run again, but I'm a great respecter of fate, and this is ultimately a family decision. I think everybody wants me to run, but we're going to have discussions about it. And I don't feel in any hurry one way or another to make that judgment today, tomorrow, whenever, no matter what my predecessor does.
The question will then be who among potential Democrats would mount a primary challenge, if anyone. California Democratic Governor Gavin Newsom has said he would not. On the Republican side, the bench is deep with potential contenders, but who is willing to wrestle through a primary against Trump? At his election night headquarter victory party after winning re-election as Florida's governor by double digits in November, Ron DeSantis smiled broadly to chance of two more years. But before all of that, Republicans have some other kind of sorting to do, figuring out who will be House Speaker, as the GOP has the majority in the House starting in January. California Congressman House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy needs 218 House Republican votes to grab speakership. He said after the midterms, he'll get there.
The American people expect us to do it. They expect us to govern. They expect us to keep our word on the commitment to America. And one thing I'll say about the entire conference, I respect each and every one. But respect them equally, and we'll find a way to make it happen.
But some have withheld support, demanding rule changes that would make it easier to remove the title of speaker from that leader, whomever that speaker is.
The biggest story of 2023 is who is going to lead the Republican Party in the House.
Josh Krasauer is a senior political correspondent for Axios and a Fox News contributor.
And I think even more importantly, are Republicans going to work together as a team and build a big tent party for the future? Or are they going to pander to the most extreme nihilistic elements of the party and get themselves off on the wrong foot as they head into, you know, what will end up eventually being a big presidential campaign?
Yeah, some people are walking around right now, Capitol Hill, with OK buttons, meaning only Kevin, and he's highlighting like more than 50 pro Kevin McCarthy statements from his allies. I guess he's in his own version of campaign mode, among and his own party members. But to that point, you know, Josh, that you just made, you know, what does this mean for the GOP for the next 2 years in terms of getting stuff done? Because he does at this point seem to have a wide range of Republicans on board with him, but not everyone.
Yeah, look, I think most effective leaders even with a party that has a lot of internal disagreements, can understand that being unified behind their leader to start the new year, to start the new Congress, is a very important thing to do. Yet you have right now at least five House Republicans who have said publicly that there's no way that they're going to support Kevin McCarthy for Speaker. And if they continue with their opposition, it's hard to see how he has the votes. So this is a real challenge for the party, and it's reflective of a lot of the issues that have faced the Republicans when it comes to sticking with their ideological purity on the far ends of the party, or whether that they can accept that there's going to be a big tent caucus, and you have even though you have some of the more ideological Freedom Caucus members who are making certain demands of McCarthy and the leadership, you also have 18 House Republicans who just won election in districts that Joe Biden won in 2020. Mm. So this, McCarthy understands that, if he goes too far in one direction, he's going to hurt his own cause. He needs to have a big tent party, and he needs to have everyone from all stripes backing him as he's the leader of the opposition now.
And the math is he needs 218. So if five are saying no way, what is he, does he have to make promises to each of them?
Well, look, I don't, you've heard the famous line from Ronald Reagan, peace through strength. When you look weak, everyone is going to be making demands of you, and you're never going to be able to really focus on the big things when it comes to party leadership. So, yes, he does need to tend and care to the needs of almost every member in his caucus. But look, if everyone is making demands of him and not looking for the best interests of the Republican Party writ large, it's a surefire path to having a very, very unproductive 2023.
All right. So let's go on to ramping up for 2024. In 2023, so far, it looks like former President Trump is the only first official GOP name who's thrown his hat in the ring, right, to run for president. When do we start hearing from whom else?
Well, look, I think you'll be hearing some names. We already know, Mike Pompeo is interested. Mike Pence, Trump's vice president, is already talking about it. Nikki Haley, the name Ron DeSantis, the big elephant in the room, of course. Look, I actually think actual decisions, public decisions, won't be made later until the spring, I think, is a better time frame. Mm-hmm. Look at Trump. Trump is in the race, and he has not gotten stronger since making that announcement at Mar-a-Lago. And I think Republicans are actually kind of content to hold their cards close to their vest. Look at what Trump does and how he kind of flails as the only candidate running for now. So I don't think you'll see an immediate decision or at least an immediate announcement from a lot of these Republicans. In the case of DeSantis, he has a Florida legislative session coming up in the beginning of this upcoming year. And I think he's not going to make any formal announcement until after I think it ends in May. So I don't think you're going to hear anything publicly from DeSantis until then at the earliest. I think the question in the first quarter of 2023 is how much ground has Trump lost within his own party? And there were some polls out this past month, Jess, that for the first time since he was a candidate in 2016, the number of Republicans who didn't view him favorably has dropped below 70% in at least one poll, one respected poll, maybe a couple others. He's taken a dip into the low 70s. That is dangerous territory for a former president. Mm-hmm. And it shows that this might be the worst political position Donald Trump has been in since he became president in November of 2016.
Yeah. What's the calculation then? Do you think if Pence and Nikki Haley and Mike Pompeo, maybe even Governors Youngkin and Kemp, are they saying, well, let's see who else goes first to challenge the former president? Are they looking at the polling and saying, well, if he dips into the 60s or something, then it doesn't matter that he's still in. I'm going to throw my hat in too. How do people sort of gauge this, and what calculations are they making?
There's such a good question, but there's so many variables. Does Trump get indicted, right, from the Department of does that affect his political standing? Does he actually run a serious campaign? I think a lot of Republicans, as far as when you strategize a 2024 campaign, if a credible Trump campaign is up and running, your strategy is going to be a lot different than if he's not running, or if he's not really running a serious campaign. So that's why I think a lot of Republicans are going to be more content to wait until there's a little clarity on what the Trump picture looks like. He is in the race right now, but we haven't seen a whole lot of seriousness from his operation lately. You know, look, if you're someone like Glenn Youngkin, let's take the Virginia governor for an example. I think he's certainly someone who can wait a whole lot of time. And sure. Youngkin's pathway, or maybe a Republican who's not quite as Trumpy, their pathway may be letting DeSantis jump in and fighting with Trump, and then hoping to be the third way or the alternative candidate who's not in the fray at the time. That may not be how things work out, right? But there are a lot of different variables. Who ends up getting in? Does Trump, you know, again, does he actually run a serious campaign, or is he just in it to protect himself from legal issues? You know, the question is, like, is the MAGA vote up for grabs? Because it seems like DeSantis is the one Republican that could effectively steal away a lot of the most Trumpian, most, you know, MAGA oriented supporters. And then the question is, like, is the more the more moderate, the more pragmatic side of the party, who do they go to? Is DeSantis that guy, or are there other Republicans like a Pence or a Youngkin or a Nikki Haley? The list goes on. Do they become more attractive? The other question is, like, we do have a possibility that we could see 2016 deja vu all over again, where Trump does runs a credible enough of a campaign, and everyone else is from the establishment, more traditional wing of the Republican Party, and they split up that vote. Mm-hmm. So that's another big question. How many Republicans actually end up getting in? And if they're all sort of traditional candidates that run traditional type of campaigns, that could be a repeat of what happened in 2016, where Trump had the base, this MAGA base, and the rest of the party ended up splitting between guys like Cruz and Kasich and Rubio and Jeb Bush and so on and so on.
Do we? I mean, I was driving the other day, and I saw a tiny, and I mean tiny, sticker on the back of a pickup truck that said DeSantis 2024. I thought, he's not even formally in. Like, who made that bumper sticker? Like, does he eventually do this? I mean, he just
well, look, Jess, I'm struck by every poll you look at, every Republican meetup you go to. DeSantis is a universally. Okay.
So it's going to happen.
Rated figure. Yeah, he's someone that everyone knows and a lot of conservatives really like. So I think big picture, the only Republican right now that could steal the Trump thunder, like can steal the Trump supporters, is Ron DeSantis. I don't think you're going to see, at least for the time being, any MAGA folks gravitating towards like a Glenn Youngkin or a Mike Pence or, you know, you name it. There's not a lot of overlap between the people who would support a Nikki Haley and support a Donald Trump, or at least be a hardcore supporter of Donald Trump. There is a lot of overlap between DeSantis supporters and Trump supporters. So that's why everyone is talking about Ron DeSantis, because he's someone who can unite that MAGA base with a more traditional side of the Republican Party.
Okay, let's talk about the Democrats. We know Biden, President Biden has said that he'd maybe indicate formally his decision in 2023, early 2023, but it's a family decision, he said. So what happens? Do we hear in March? Do we hear in April that he's running?
It does feel like Biden's decision is almost connected to Trump's standing in the Republican primary, right? So if Trump looks more likely to be the nominee, I think Biden is more likely to run on the Democratic side. That means I think Biden is going to take his time and not rush to an announcement. But everything I hear from the White House, from Capitol Hill, suggests he is very much preparing for a re-election campaign. But I would note that if you look at every poll almost since the election, even though it was a very, very good election for the Democratic Party and for President Biden, majorities of Democrats don't really want Joe Biden to run again. And he would be, Jess, 82 years old, the year of the campaign, and he would be 86 at the end of a second term. Now, those are issues that a lot of voters, even Democrats, have a hard time kind of grappling with. So, you know, I think Biden is much more likely to run, and he's preparing to run against Trump. But if DeSantis all of a sudden becomes the front runner, if he gets in and takes the lead, you know, I think the White House is going to take their time and may reevaluate if that ends up becoming the case. Because, look, Trump and Biden, both old statesmen or older figures in terms of age. And a DeSantis-Biden matchup would provide such a generational contrast that could favor the Republican Party. And Democrats may then decide if it would look like it was going to be DeSantis or anyone else who's younger. They may want to go in a different direction accordingly.
Josh, finally, we've all known people in their late 70s, early 80s. Calculations can change at that time in your life, right? Things can happen rapidly. If the president says, in the spring of 2023, okay, I'm running. But then a year later says, for whatever reason, you know what, I can't. I need to bow out, or I'm, you know, whatever. Does someone like California Governor Gavin Newsom, who has said he will not run against Biden, will he have enough time to jump in? Or if you want to run, do you have to start raising money early and start that ball rolling earlier? And you can't really wait until the man of the hour, you know, makes some change to his decision.
Yeah, I mean, look, if Biden made a later decision not to run, it would advantage Democrats who already have a high profile, who already have some kind of fundraising network. So, you know, obviously Vice President Harris would certainly have an advantage, I think, under that scenario. But someone like Gavin Newsom, I mean, he's the governor of the biggest state in the country, or most populous state in the country. So I think anyone like that would also have a real chance if they wanted to run. But look, you know, I think these days you could raise money. I mean, anyone who catches fire can get a lot of donations online and really make themselves, you know, financially formidable. So, you know, I think if you're like a Jared Polis or a lesser known governor, you know, Gretchen Whitmer or something like that, you know, maybe you would not have as much of an easy time turning things around if you wanted to make a presidential campaign. But look, I think there are plenty of big names in the Democratic Party, from the vice president, Pete Buttigieg, you mentioned Newsom, that would certainly, you know, chomp at the bit to run for president. Mm-hmm.
Josh Grassauer, thank you so much for joining us, and happy holidays.
Thanks, Jess.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
If there was ever a time when the United States needed some holiday joy, it was in December of 1863. The country was 2 years into a violent civil war, and many of the nation's children had lost their fathers on the battlefields across the country. That year, one editorial cartoonist decided jolly old Saint Nick needed to make one very important stop that year, and that would be to the war zone. One iconic picture in particular of Santa delivering presents to Union soldiers is credited with helping build the morale needed to motivate the nation.
Number one, Civil War. Anytime you talk about it and you talk about how close we came to the whole country blowing up, obviously with secession, you realize how extreme things got and how dangerous our future was.
Fox News's Brian Kilmeade recently hosted a Fox Nation special on how Santa won the Civil War and shares with us the story behind Santa's role in the war and the man who helped create the Santa we know today.
And people overreact to what we're going through today. Wow, Republicans and Democrats are divided. Yeah, but they're not shooting each other. We don't have brothers killing brothers. You know, we don't have states fighting against entire states. We don't have the West Point graduating class putting together armies and fighting each other with real guns and blowing each other up. And then to go back to that time and see where hope came from, and you have Thomas Nast, this great journalistic photographer, who's a great thinker, was able to help America put the horrors of Civil War, where almost everyone you know lost somebody in that war or feels guilty that they survived the war, feeling better about themselves come the holidays. And then you look at the Civil War back then and you ever think about America 150 years ago, and then think about how Santa took root in America and had a life of its own, as well as, you know, the commercialization that came later that many people find distasteful, but how this figure was able to grow, that Thomas Nast loved to write about and draw on, and literally draw, the Santa character became part of American culture. So I think that's an important time. When people look at Santa, they go, okay, it's there every year. Number one, you can't take it for granted after the pandemic, because a lot of people didn't have Christmas and haven't had Christmas for 3 years. So number two is, how'd it get here? How'd it get so big? Why is it in every parade? Why is it in every mall? Who deserves credit for it? And that's why this idea was great. And that's why seeing it on Fox Nation gives you a good perspective.
Right. And so most of this story spotlights on Thomas Nast, who, you know, had this story of coming to America, was really young, got into illustrations and drawings. You know, can you talk a little bit about his childhood and how he got into the journalism world?
Well, I mean, one of the big things that he did that made a name for himself is working with this police chief called Teddy Roosevelt. And he would, the plot of the immigrants was something that was not often seen. So when these immigrants came in from Ellis Island or wherever they came in from, they would kind of be taken advantage of almost as indentured servants in downtown Manhattan. They live in horrible conditions in New York City throughout the boroughs. They wouldn't have any rights. They wouldn't have any voice. They wouldn't know how to get out from under it. And here they are trying to escape oppression in the middle of oppression. So Thomas Nast and Teddy Roosevelt, the first police commissioner of New York and the first one maybe in the country, decide they're going to shed a light on this story, but not just with words, but with pictures. And Thomas Nast would actually function with Teddy Roosevelt and go around and take pictures of them, these men and women, boys and families in these horrible conditions, and bring it to light and force regulation and change throughout time. And Thomas Nast has just been a part of American society all the way through. And although he'd go out and break stories and take pictures and it would be important, he'd always go back to Santa because of his horrific upbringing. He wanted to think of better times. You know, anyone who lived through that time wanted to think of better times. What I also think is important to point out is, to put in perspective for today, when you read about people after the Civil War, you read about parents that are worried that their kids are not as tough as they were. They're soft. Because after the Civil War, we drew down. We stopped fighting. We stopped shooting. We stopped building up the military. By the way, it was a problem in World War I. We really had no military to fight. And then they said, wow, this generation's not hungry. They're not tough. They're not tough like we were. Of course. And they didn't have to be. Guess what people are saying now about this generation? They're not tough. They're weak. They're not motivated. Well, they didn't have to be. Well, now we'll see what their potential is, because arguably maybe now they have to be.
And long before Nast was writing these was doing these illustrations about Boss Tweed and really exposing a lot of corruption that was going on, you know, his depiction of Santa when he was a lot younger kind of became the popular and in many ways the form of Santa that we see now. You know, what was Santa like before Thomas Nast, and how did it change?
Well, I think Thomas Nast brought it to life, brought it to great detail. He started giving him character and a personality. And before that, he was this German figure known as a overgrown elf, somewhat of a weight problem. Didn't even know if he was jolly. He was just a figure. He was a figure of that time. And there's something about it grabbed Thomas Nast, says, I could make this something that the kids can enjoy and get put a smile back on a whole generation's faces. And the more he went back to it year after year, the more personality he brought, the more stories he brought to it, how he transported himself, what he would use to get into houses. All that stuff came out of his drawings.
And what do you think made his one particularly popular? Why did it grow in popularity? Was it because Harper's Weekly was a popular paper, or was it more to it than that?
I think Harper's Weekly had a lot to do with it. Thomas Nast already had a name. Number three, the passion that he brought to it. And then he was willing to do interviews about it and talk to other people about it because he had such pride in it. And also, I think it was almost therapeutic for him to get away from the humdrum, sometimes horrific things that we all see in news. He said, this is nothing but fun. And I think that became it. The other thing is the public. They thirsted for something fun. They thirsted for something magical. They thirsted for something hopeful. They wanted to give their kids an escape. So I think it was the right person at the right time with the right message in the right country that made Santa this phenom we have today.
Right, and then we get into the Civil War. And I think that a lot of people there's a misconception about the Civil War where you feel like one side, everyone on one side completely thought one way, everyone another thought the other way. But it wasn't really like that in the Union. There was a lot of division about the war and how people felt about it. And obviously there were other issues like inflation. A lot of people were dying at the time. You know, why was it important for his Santa to be a figure of unity, especially during the Civil War and in a time when America was so divided and also suffering a lot too?
Well, I think it is. I mean, no doubt about it. You have to have something to bond everybody together. So the thing that through time, if your country is going through a tough time, maybe like Russia is because they're economic policy is such a failure. You find an opponent and you galvanize that opponent. If your country's going through a rough time, you could do that, or you could say, find something to look up to, a figure, real or imagined, and then unify around that figure. I mean, how could you see politics? How could you see slavery, anti-slavery, emancipation in Santa? It doesn't come up. This is a figure that's apolitical, that it's universal because most people, Christians, celebrate the 25th. They know when this happens, what happens, exchange of gifts, what figure is out there to unify. It's Santa Claus. Who could be bigger than life? Santa Claus. And what? Guess what? In talking to him, not once did I bring up anything to do with politics, division, death, or destruction.
Right. And in many ways, too, his Santa Claus kind of he made it a little more popular outside the Christian faith, too, correct? Or he made Christmas more popular outside the Christian faith, correct?
Yeah. The Jewish community, obviously, it never really took hold. But there was people that noticed it is the Christmas season. It becomes a season. It becomes an economic argument. No, not an argument. Economic support. And then people just like being around for the stuff that we experience today. Imagine people listening to us right now had an office party to go to or a family party to go to or will be attending one. So you'd be lighting Christmas trees back then, literally lighting them and going to different events. And that'll be another unifying force. People aren't like, well, do you celebrate the birth of Jesus? Are you Catholic? I think it was a unifying reason to get together in a time in which we were professional at staying apart.
And now getting back to the Civil War, there was one particular cartoon that he drew, which involved Santa Claus speaking to the troops and bringing a little figure of Jefferson Davis being executed with him. You know, why particularly that one that stood out? And also, I think a good illustration of the time was, I believe the Union was going through a lot at that time. There had been a lot of losses on the battlefield. I don't think a lot of the troops expected the war to last as long as it did, especially at that point, too. And generals had been cycled in and out of the army as well. You know, why particularly that time was it important? And why that particular cartoon, too, that kind of galvanized the movement?
I know people are listening to us in the South and have Confederates in their heritage, but we know who we wanted to win. And we know Jefferson Davis was a war hero and a standout senator, but he was also led the rebellion. And because of him and his leadership, hundreds of thousands of Americans would die. So as much as Santa is hope and is fun, right then for most of America who wanted freedom and emancipation for all, Jefferson Davis was the villain. So he had the ultimate hero with the ultimate villain. That helped him grow. Also, it caused controversy. You know, should that be something Santa's a part of?
Interesting. What was Nast's life like after the war? I think in many ways you could probably say he was kind of like an example of what a social media star would be today, where he was kind of showing the world his home in many ways, too, and kind of using that. And that kind of became popular with the Christmas culture.
I mean, the fact that we're talking about him now shows the impact he's made. And after the war, he was looking to decompress and change the tone and get the horror out of his mind. And he would do it through some journalistic principles and exploits, but he'd also do it through this character. That's why when they came up to me and said how Santa won the Civil War, I'm like, well, that's an extreme example. But the more you think of it, provided hope, provided a beacon of hope, something to shoot for the holidays. Something that everyone could see, even your family back at home, and say, well, you know, Santa Claus, that could think of your father or your brother or your son that's fighting in battle because they're looking at the same thing. And listen, Santa, not a violent person by nature, but most people in the North would have loved the opportunity to hang Jefferson Davis. Instead, he ran.
And so what has been your biggest takeaway from the story of Thomas Nast, but also just the story of how Santa Claus has been a uniting figure for many in this country?
Everything. Everything about this was new to me. So to be a uniting figure, I just thought it was a figure in a country that grew in popularity. But as a uniting figure, absolutely. You know, people just talk about from politically what happened after the war. They don't talk about psychologically what it was like to walk out of your house and all of a sudden, if you're in Pennsylvania, you're in the middle of a war, a classic battle. What if you see the death and destruction of the bodies who were mauled, who were found for years after, just dead in the woods, you know, dead in the streets? What was that like? How this country was traumatized because we fought with such vigor against others and would for generations, but we fought with that same pride against each other. So how this whole country was traumatized and they were looking for something to be that stress relief. And that stress relief was the holidays. And outlining the holidays and underlying it was Santa. So a serious end to a fun, a serious element to a fun character.
Fox News' Brian Kilmeade, thank you so much.
Thank you.
With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again.
There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Tomorrow on the Fox News Rundown, it's Christmas Day. With the final days of the 117th Congress coming to a close, what lies ahead as Republicans take control of the House in 2023? Then, we'll be taking a look at one of the most famous moments of the Revolutionary War, General George Washington crossing the Delaware River. Until then, I'm Ryan Schmelz. Thanks for listening to the Fox News Rundown from Washington.
Stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Kilmeade. I want you to join me weekdays at 9 a.m. East as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and, of course, what you think.
Listen live or get the podcast now at BrianKilmeadeShow.com.